Welcome to Managing Myeloma. I'm Dr. Sadu Usmani. Today I'd like to discuss an overview of key topics discussed this year at the 4th International Conference on Multiple Myeloma held in Mandalo, France. This year's conference covered presentations focused on smoldering myeloma, frontline therapy, assessment of response, relapse myeloma, as well as advances in immunotherapies. I would like to share a few insights from these presentations. From the smoldering myeloma to active myeloma, that was the first session that was covered by Dr. Mateos and Dr. Gobrial. And, they walked through what defines smoldering myeloma, especially with the current concept where many of us are thinking that this MGUS to active myeloma transition, as it's taking place, there are patients who either have MGUS or they have active myeloma that has not presented with symptoms yet. So they took a deeper dive and talked about, how to define high-risk smoldering myeloma and some of the, key features in clonal evolution from MGUS to smoldering myeloma, where we may be able to tease out patients who have real myeloma that hasn't declared itself and true MGUS. They also talked about how to manage patients from a disease biology perspective, looking at the pace with which the monoclonal protein and the light chains are moving, and how imaging plays a role, especially in the context of the new whole body MRIs and CAT scans, which have better ability to look at what's going on inside the bone marrow. And then CTs are able to capture bone damage and changes to the architecture much better than skeletal surveys. So these kind of things were explored along with clinical trials that are being done in high-risk smoldering myeloma. So both Dr. Gobrial and Dr. Marie-Vie Mateos have conducted clinical trials that have been focusing on those high-risk smoldering myeloma patients. They've already presented early data at previous ASH meetings, and so they discussed some of the newer trials such as the CESAR trial and the elotuzumab Lendex combinations during their presentation. I think we should keep this in the context of where the field is going. We're going to see more and more of these evaluations looking at the immunome, MGUS to smoldering to active myeloma transition, genomic and epigenomic changes, and how to tease out which patients to pick for treatment, and then what would be the best treatment strategies. So be on the lookout at future meetings. This is a hot area of research, and we are trying to landmark where in the spectrum of MGUS to active myeloma patients actually need to be initiated on treatment. Then within the frontline therapy, there was a European perspective and the US perspective given to induction regimens for both transplant eligible as well as ineligible patients. Historically, looking at the proteasome inhibitor based triplets, where they've been combined with IMiDs as well as with alkylators such as cyclophosphamide for the transplant eligible patients. And then looking at the non-alkylator based novel agent treatments, comparing them to totally novel agent treatments for older patients. And the field of geriatric oncology and assessments is something that is still underexplored. So Sonia Zweigman helped cover some of these new geriatric assessments that are being considered for myeloma patients, knowing that an average myeloma patient at diagnosis is around the age of 69 or 70, this leaves us with majority of myeloma patients, being in the geriatric range where we are trying to figure out, how their physiological age, whether it matches up or is better or worse than their chronological age. The new clinical trials that are exploring the combinations of monoclonal antibodies as well as other novel drug classes in combination with the usual three drug regimens were discussed for the transplant eligible patients. On the forefront was the daratumumab combinations. There were also discussions about transplant ineligible clinical trial options with all oral regimens that include the oral proteasome inhibitor ixazomib with existing myeloma therapies. There was also discussion around the long-awaited data that should be coming, later this year, combining monoclonal antibodies with immunomodulatory drugs and dexamethasone for older transplant ineligible patients. So there were discussions around some of these ongoing trials. Within the transplant space, we saw, some of the IFM-2009 clinical trial data with early versus delayed stem cell transplant. Also curious data on survival benefit in subsets of patients within the EMN-02 trial, which had looked at, a bortezomib-based induction therapy along with a maintenance strategy, and sandwiched in between were patients who had single or double stem cell transplantations. So those specific trials were discussed. There was a lot of interest in developing newer strategies for high-risk myeloma patients, knowing that that's a group that we struggle with as a whole. And, a subset analysis from the EMN-02 trial, which has been presented, at ASH last year, was revisited, especially in context of tandem transplants, which have over the years fallen out of favor. But perhaps, the data show a curious signal in high-risk patients. We also discussed that with the plethora of novel agents and drug classes coming down the pike, especially with interest in immunotherapies and the chimeric antigen receptor T cells, T cell therapies, whether there would be a role for tandem transplants. Allogeneic stem cell transplant was also discussed in the same context, with the newer cellular therapies that are being developed in myeloma, whether it makes sense to be pursuing clinical trials with, either tandems or allogeneic stem cell transplant. The relapse myeloma space had a lot of discussions. For early relapse, we have several different clinical trial options available, and there was robust discussion. I think there were two or three different sessions where, there was discussions around how to pick regimens, how to pick one triplet from the other, from what subsets of patients. The distinction between slow biochemical relapse as well as a rapid clinical relapse, discussions around what choices do we have for the high-risk early relapse patients and how to make the best, in terms of depth of response. And in that light, minimal residual disease data from the Castor and Pollux trials was discussed with longer follow-up, as well as in context of standard versus high-risk disease. There was also discussion around patients who may be PI or IMiD refractory, which would be the right options for them. Discussions around salvage chemotherapy were also discussed. Then, the talks on late relapses and newer drug classes highlighted, selinexor, which is an exportin-1 inhibitor, and it's making its way, hopefully towards regulatory approvals as single agent, but there are several combination clinical trials being looked at, in the early as well as late relapse setting, combinations with bortezomib, with carfilzomib, immunomodulatory drugs, and even with daratumumab, which is an anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody. And there was a lot of excitement about venetoclax. There are combination clinical trials as well as single agent clinical trials with venetoclax that are waiting to mature. We already have published data with single agent activity, especially in the context of translocation 11-14 disease, as well as some guiding post on which patients within translocation 11-14 disease may benefit the most, and what combinations make intuitive sense. Then there are a big host of immunotherapies that are coming down the pike in myeloma, and there was a session that was led by Dr. Ken Anderson, where I spoke about the monoclonal antibodies. Dr. Jesus Berdeja updated us on the state of the art with the different CAR T cell trials, and then Dr. Anderson wrapped the session up, bringing all of those elements together. So within my talk, I went through the history of monoclonal antibody development in myeloma, looking at the strategies that have failed in the past, looking at IL-6 receptor as well as IL-6 specific monoclonal antibodies that were evaluated in the early 2000s that did not show any clinical activity on their own in myeloma or in combination with other drug classes that were available at that point. There were clinical trials that were done to target against DKK1 to really focus on bone disease and reverse the bone damage that is done in specific subtypes of hyperdiploidy myeloma. But then, our first real success of single agent activity was with daratumumab, which is an anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody. And shortly thereafter, we had an approval of elotuzumab with len and dexamethasone in early relapsed myeloma. Even though elotuzumab did not have single agent activity, it appears to partner well with immunomodulatory drugs. There was also discussion around the monoclonal antibodies that are still in clinical development. So isatuximab is an anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody, which is a little behind daratumumab in clinical development, but it too has good clinical activity as a single agent as well as in combination with immunomodulatory drugs. And we're waiting for some of the pivotal phase 3 trials to mature for that particular option. Isatuximab is distinct from daratumumab since it targets a different epitope. So hypothetically, if one fails one anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody, they may be responding to the second monoclonal antibody, although the clinical data to prove that point is lacking. Then my talk went into a discussion around the antibody drug conjugates that are in development in myeloma. Perhaps the one that's farthest along in development is the GSK compound 916, which targets BCMA. We had a first look of that compound a little over a year ago with single agent activity in a small subset of patients. I believe the phase 1 trial had a small expansion of their MTD dose with 9 patients, and 6 of those 9 patients had a PR or better response, which got all of us excited. Since then, the 916 compound has had further patients treated on that particular trial, and there are some larger phase 3s that are moving forward with that compound. I have to say that one concern in terms of AE and SAEs that we had with the GSK compound was the ocular toxicity that's observed. Although it's reversible, it becomes a specific issue for patients. And there appears to be known mechanism for this. It's thought to be a reversible process, but patients do require ophthalmic evaluations quite frequently, and this is something from a development standpoint, we'll have to look at different schedules of treatment as well as different potential dosings as we combine this drug with other mechanisms of actions for myeloma, but it's certainly very potent. The next drug class that I talked about in my talk were bispecific monoclonal antibodies. Currently we have bispecific monoclonal antibodies that are targeting BCMA, GCPR5D, and SLAMF7, I believe, is also coming along. The concept of bispecific monoclonal antibody actually dates back to the late 60s. The idea was, if you can engineer an antibody that tags the cancer cell and on one of the arms tags the CD3 on surface of T cells, it can bring together the T cell with the cancer cell and let the T cell take the cancer cell out. So earlier this year we've seen some data presented showing clinical activity with AMG-420, which is a continuous infusion bispecific monoclonal antibody targeting BCMA. There are several others that are in clinical development. The main message we're getting about BCMA is it's a very good myeloma target. Now we're trying to figure out, what are the best ways of treating it, whether it's ADCs, bispecifics, or CAR T cell therapies. And speaking of CAR T cell therapies, my talk was followed by a talk from Dr. Jesus Berdeja, who updated us on the state of art with the CAR T cell therapies. The first part of his talk was more informational about what CAR T cells are, what's the difference between first, second, third generation and subsequent generations of CAR Ts. He highlighted the BCMA CAR T data that's been already presented and published by the NCI group, the UPenn group, and then highlighted the Bluebird BB2121 data that were presented earlier this year at ASCO by Dr. Nupur Rajay. And some data from the Nanjing Biolegend LCAR, BCMA CAR T cell. The latter company, Nanjing Biolegend, has been it has now been bought by Janssen, and further development of that BCMA CAR T is being done by Janssen. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some clinical activity data from the early phase trials perhaps in a year from now. With BB2121, almost all patients at the optimal cell dose of more than 150 million CAR T cells showed disease response, but perhaps the best responses were seen with the higher cell doses, closer to 450 million CAR T cells given. In terms of progression-free survival, Dr. Berdeja has shared that patients who got the BCMA CAR T had roughly, 11 and a half to 12 months of PFS benefit, which is, almost thrice as better than any other single agent mechanism of action that we have in relapse refractory patients. And these were patients who were beyond fifth median prior lines of treatment. There were patients who were refractory to pomalidomide, carfilzomib, as well as daratumumab, in this BCMA CAR T experience. So, there were some of us that did not share the enthusiasm. They were expecting more from the CAR Ts, perhaps, with the curative intent in mind. But, in general, I think these results are very impressive and early. BCM, the CAR Ts are still a younger technology compared to others. So we have to just stay tuned, and wait for more data to emerge. Then the last and perhaps a very cool talk that Dr. Ken Anderson gave kind of brought around the concept of not simply looking at the myeloma cell biology, but also the bone marrow microenvironment along with the immune repertoire, and it would be a three-pronged approach if we are to cure or have a long-term disease control for myeloma when patients are diagnosed. He covered parts of the talks that Jesus and I had. Conceptually, he highlighted, why it's important to go after the immune repertoire, why the same, disease biology may behave differently in different patients. He also highlighted some of the newer mechanisms of actions that are being developed, such as PROTACs. He also talked about some of the newer ways that in which you can modulate the immune system beyond the checkpoint inhibition of PD-1, PD-L1 pathway. overall, brought the whole context of the meeting together in that one particular talk. With that in mind, I would like to conclude the summary that I've given for the ASH meeting. Thank you for viewing this activity.